Hey everyone, welcome to the Post Game Plan. I'm your host, Ali Samani, and this is the career development hub for all current as well as former NBA players. And as I mentioned in our last podcast, we will be going outside of those lines and looking at the other four major sports, including hockey, football, as well as baseball. And we're really excited with our guest today. His name is Maurice Taylor. He is actually the Vice President of Investor Relations at Metrics Capital, and he was in the 1997 NBA draft class. He recently retired in 2006 from the NBA, but played a number of seasons, I believe three seasons, in Italy, China, and we're very excited to have him to share his transition experience, as well as some of the work that he's doing right now and how he prepared for life after basketball. Maurice, how are you doing today?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thank you so much for joining us. Now, what I really, you know, I guess one of the initial questions that I have is, did you consider life after basketball while you were playing the game?
I mean, the politically correct answer would be yes.
Right,
but
right.
I think that I'm more of a realist than, you know, a lot of other players. I mean, obviously I had ideas of what I wanted to do, but at the same time, I really didn't have a structured game plan, you know, like I needed.
Right.
I was involved in a lot of different things. I owned a Little Caesars franchise. I owned a Altoona Move, which is a mechanic shop, and I also did shoe stores, retail shoe stores. So I was involved in automobile maintenance, food, and retail. So, and you know, I really didn't have a true game plan of what I wanted to do, but I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. So that's what I did. You know, during my last few years in the NBA, that's what I was doing, you know, a couple of years after. Then 2007 to 2008 hit, and retail took a tank, and automobile maintenance took a tank. So that's when I tried to decide on what I wanted to do from there, and I knew I wanted to be in the world of finance and investing, so I kind of moved on.
Okay. Now, just to backtrack a little bit, you mentioned that you owned a couple of businesses within the context of your playing career. Now, while you were playing, was it hard to manage those business endeavors? Did you have people that were working for you at the time? And how did you find those people if you did?
I mean, realistically, I mean, you don't really have the time that's needed to be a sole proprietor in any type of venture like that.
Right.
You know, so it was a lot of, you know, me doing a lot of delegating. But at the same time, I think that if you listen to career, you know, business people and serial entrepreneurs, they'll let you know that it's still not the same as the proprietor being there running things.
Right.
So I had people that helped me out. I had accountants that helped me out, you know, with taxes and things like that. And also had people that helped me out with the everyday running of the business. But it wasn't the same. And I would definitely let any, you know, current player, you know to where that you definitely have to have a good team in order to do things like that while you're playing. Obviously, you know, when you're not playing, you lend more time, you know, to spend on the whatever venture it is. But, you know, I have people that looked over things, but it wasn't the same. You know, it's never the same as a proprietor, you know, being there every single day.
Okay. Now, and you said, you know, the automobile industry took a different turn, and you know, your career also took a different turn when in 2007 you started playing overseas in Italy and China, and you did that up until last year, actually, in 2010 or 2011 even. Now, tell me a little bit about that transition going from playing in American League to playing overseas and still being able to manage those businesses or determining what it is that you wanted to do thereafter.
I mean, it was hard, you know, as far in that aspect. The basketball playing, you know, it was still the same game.
Right.
Obviously, the first spot that I went to after the NBA was Milan. So, you know, it's the worst places in the world that I could play.
Right, right.
I really enjoyed Italy. I really had a great time. And, you know, during that time, it was really tough for me to keep a handle on everything that I had going on. Obviously, you know, I did the best I could. I had a team around me. But at the same time, it wasn't easy. I'm not going to say it's easy. It's hard running the business when you're there every day. It's even harder when you're, you know, obviously in a different country. So, or on a different continent for that matter. But it definitely, you know, definitely was tough. But I think that during that time was when I wanted to structure things I started just paying more attention to what I wanted to do when I was completely done playing. Right. And I think during the time that I was overseas, you know, it gave me a lot of time and a lot of, you know, a lot of room for thought on how I wanted to do my post, you know, basketball career. I think that's when I really started taking it even more seriously about what to do and how to structure what I wanted to do.
So it seems as if, you know, going overseas was almost a blessing in disguise, where it gave you an opportunity to get some clarity on your career and choose your path and kind of be the sole owner of that path. Now, how did you basically determine that finance was something that you were interested in? Did you take some type of test? Did you network with different individuals, or was it something that was always ingrained in you?
I think with me, it was something I was always interested in.
Okay.
I didn't take any tests. I mean, obviously, I have a network of individuals that I've met throughout my career that was involved in finance, investing, hedge funds, real estate deals, whatever the venture may be, I knew people in that area. And basically, one thing I can say is that I learned on the fly. I was always pretty good at math. I was always, you know, had an eye, you know, on the stock market, had an eye on, you know, any type of commodities trading, funds trading, anything for that matter. I've always been interested in it. And I just applied my interest to the vast network of people that I know and just learned on the fly, you know, just set in on different deals, talk to different people about different deals. You know, obviously, with me being an entrepreneur myself, I knew, you know, some, you know, of ways of closing the deal. Like, I knew finances, I knew amortization schedules, you know, and I just applied that, you know, as an interest to the people that I know and kind of learned on the fly, like a running internship, you know, right. If I may.
Okay. Now, would you, I guess, you know, some of the individuals that you did talk to, and you said you learned on the fly. Now, obviously, you're quite fortunate to have that ability. What would you suggest to other players that are kind of going through that process where they're trying to find their niche?
I think networking is key. I mean, networking is key. You know, just basically taking the opportunity that you have, you know, obviously being in front of different people of all walks of, you know, of life and all different financial classes. I mean, it's amazing how many people you come in front of that are in corporate America when you're playing basketball. And you always need to keep those relationships and not burn any bridges to where, you know, once you start your post-career, these are people that you can call upon for knowledge or, you know, to help you with the deal that you may have on the table. I mean, it's just, and I think that's what I like about Metrics, because that's what we do. We actually created an arm of Metrics that's, you know, we're in the process of building an athlete fund, an athlete venture capital fund. And this is where athletes can actually invest in, you know, great investment. And I think that once you get a network of companies and individuals that do that sort of thing, you empower yourself. And you're not just giving your money to a financial advisor and, you know, let him, you know, do the cookie cutter investments that they usually do for athletes.
Wow. Now, before we get to what you're doing today and how that's kind of contributing towards your larger mission, I kind of just want to backtrack a little bit and ask you, going back to the time when you were playing in the NBA and when you were managing those companies, how did you determine those investments were going to be ideal for you, and how did you even get involved in those investments? If you can give us, you know, your thoughts on that.
Okay. The initial investments were just from associates, even like with Little Caesars. The reason I got involved in Little Caesars is because Little Caesars is a franchise that concentrates on high volume. You know, they concentrate on basically, you know, pizza. You know, they do pizzas. They do, you know, the $5 hot and ready that goes out the door, and the volume of people that they serve and the amount of overhead. You know, it looked like it was a good investment.
Right.
Low overhead, high volume, that's something small to get into with the thought of franchising more than one store, you know, after, you know, you get one up and running and self-sustaining, you move on to the next one. So, you know, it's typical franchising.
Exactly.
That's what Little Caesars, as well as the mechanic shop, was. As far as my retail stores, I owned a couple of high-end sneaker boutiques that specialized in, you know, high-end sneakers and your hard to find and limited edition type footwear, a little apparel. But one thing that I learned about retail is that retail is based on disposable income, meaning that when the economy goes down and people lose their disposable income, you know, it's hard for retail to sustain. Like if the mall that I'm in, you know, volume drops by 30%, well, that's going to directly affect me.
Absolutely.
And retail was funny that way. So it was different doing all three. All three has their pros and all three has their cons.
Yeah. Now let's get to where you are today, because this is a fantastic opportunity, it seems like, that you're involved in with a great company. And, you know, I'd love to hear about some of the work that you have and your mission within the company in terms of servicing athletes.
Well, right now, what I'm doing with them, I actually, through my vast network of people that I know, I bring a lot of people to the table that actually look to be, you know, venture capitalists, so to say, or to just be private lenders in certain, you know, deals that we have, as well as, you know, producing deals that are good investments for the people that are in my network. Now, with that being said, the baby of Metrics Capital and really what we're really trying to, you know, put out there in the marketplace and put out there to our demographics is to create a private fund of athlete investors. So where athletes can actually come together with individuals they may know, it may be teammates, maybe guys that you play against, but to put money in a pool, in a fund, in a venture fund that actually goes out and funds deals like, you know, startup tech companies, you know, energy related companies, or, you know, debt equity deals that assures them a residual income, you know, going forward. So this is the way, well, our goal is to actually have athletes invest in things like, you know, for instance, a great company that we're in contact with, PivotShare.com, you know, and things like that, tech companies, you know, there's no reason why you shouldn't see athletes investing in Zynga, Groupon, or Facebook.
Right.
You know, it's no reason with the type of income they bring in that they shouldn't be players in that realm, in that type of investment.
Absolutely.
Not just invest in record labels, clothing lines, and, you know, things of that nature. You know, we want to empower the athlete to be owners, to have a board of directors seat, to get involved with these companies from the startup stages all the way to the exit or IPO stage. And that's what we want to do at Metrics Capital.
That's fantastic. I can obviously see a strong need within the athlete space, professional athlete space. And you're right. There's no reason why these types of individuals with high net worth should not be involved in deals that involve tech space or involve some of these major companies that are being lured by venture capital firms currently.
Right, exactly. And then the thing about it, venture capitalist firms, one thing about, a venture capitalist firm, when they come in, they're basically looking at the bottom line. You know, you're looking at advertising dollars and this, that, and the other. So why shouldn't athletes have a fund that actually do the same thing, that come in and invest in these companies just like a venture capitalist would and have the same type of power as they would, have the same type of equity in a company as they would? Because one thing about investing for a return is great. Investing for equity is, you know, a whole different story.
Absolutely. This is great. You know what? So at the end of each show, we have kind of a pay it forward moment where our guest gets an opportunity to speak with aspiring professionals, athletes, as well as current professional athletes and retired professional athletes. Depending on your experiences and the best practices that you've learned throughout your career, I'd love for you to get an opportunity to share some of those thoughts with our audience.
Obviously, I would love to. I think that one thing about athletes is you have to take an advantage of the moment that you're in. You know, I was told that by, you know, a veteran a long time ago. It's like you have to take advantage of the moment. And that doesn't just mean you take advantage of, you know, playing on the big stage and things of that nature. Take advantage of all the people who may, you know, admire you, all the people who may be watching you, and use that as a crash course in corporate America. Because the way you come off as a basketball player, if you come off as some guy that's just interested in reading the sports section or just interested in you know, just the most, you know, minute things have to go to the game, those people who, you know, American Express is one of the biggest sponsors of the NBA. You know, you have, you know, companies, Fortune 500 companies that these guys come in contact with on almost a daily basis. You have the guys that sit in front row at the Staples Center that are worth, you know, $50 to $100 million. And you have to take advantage of the moment you're in and use those connects to create a valuable network for after you're done playing. And I just think that's the easiest thing for an athlete to do is to use – you basically got to use your celebrity to create your post-basketball career. And I think that's the easiest thing to do.
Definitely a strong message, and I do appreciate – you sharing that with our audience. I think that our audience will take in some of the things that you've mentioned, and especially with the experiences that you've had, because you've had a unique career both playing within the NBA and overseas, and now being a VP of investor relations for Metrix Capital. I think the work you guys are doing from a venture capital standpoint and getting athletes involved in that process of investing in some of these elite opportunities is fantastic. Now, I'd love for my audience to know where they can find you, be it on Twitter or on a website. Please feel free to share that as well.
I'm pretty much on any social networking website. I'm actually on Twitter, Mo Taylor, MOTAYLOR 23. I'm on Instagram, same name, and I'm on Facebook, same thing, Maurice Taylor.
Okay.
Mo Taylor 23.
Fantastic, Mo. Thank you so much. We really appreciate you taking the time out to speak with our audience today. And I do wish you great success with Metrix Capital. And I know that that's going to be a successful endeavor just because of the need that currently exists out there. So thanks a lot once again. And I hope you guys have a great day. Thank you, Mo. And until the next show, take care, everybody.
Thanks a lot.
All right.